It is Saturday, August 30th, 2008, 10:06 a.m. on the Central Coast of California. Today on Geek Speak, the geek news and your questions and comments of technology. Unfortunately, Buzz Aldrin had to cancel at the last minute.
The bandwidth for geekspeak.org is provided by GNI, gnihosting.com.
Welcome to Geek Speak, bridging the gap between geeks and the rest of humanity. I'm your host, Lyle Troxell. Please keep in mind the views expressed during Geek Speak are not necessarily those of KUSP. Today on Geek Speak, we were planning to have astronaut and American hero Buzz Aldrin on. He had to cancel at the last minute. At first, I thought it was because he heard the title of the show, Geek Speak, and thought, nah, he's not going to be on with us geeks. But that's not the case because he's willing to do it next week. He just can't do it today. So, tune into Geek Speak next week for Buzz Aldrin. We'll be shuffling the schedule for him because, of course, we are very excited about talking with him. Of course, during today's show, we're going to be covering the geek news. We've got a whole bunch lined up, and we'll be taking your calls with questions and comments about technology. Of course, you can ask us anything you'd like. We've got some Linux experts, some Macintosh experts, some Windows experts, some electronics experts, some Prius experts. You know, we're here to serve. The phone numbers are 476-2800, toll-free at 1-800-655-5877. You can send us email right now. Just go to geekspeak.org. I'll give out that contact information again when I invite your participation in about a half an hour. GeekSpeak on KOSP, supported by Santa Cruz Electronics, offering an extensive selection of computer and electronic parts, as well as support services. Santa Cruz Electronics is open daily at 2808 SoCal Avenue and online at santacruzelectronics.com. This is Geek Speak. My name is Lyle Troxell. In the air room with me are the traditional geeks. And I say that because 7 years ago or so when we started the show, there were four of us. Myself?
Eight years ago.
Okay.
2000.
And they've been complaining ever since. We started off with myself, and I think the first show had John on? Yeah, and then Miles came to... No, and then Sean, and then Miles. Anyway, we got Sean Cleveland, Senior Technical Market Manager at NVIDIA. Hey.
Good morning.
We have Miles Elam, student program and political junkie. Morning, Miles.
Good morning.
Now, you guys I see almost every week, but John is he's our space expert, and he was on today because, of course, we had Buzz Aldrin planned out. John Tracy is the tech support at Acelion, and a great guy. He was the traditional Mac guy, though now most of us are using Macs, and he's the space guy. And, John, thanks for coming back to the show.
Thank you. Good morning.
We're going to do geek news.
Wait. Who are you again?
My name's Lyle Troxell.
And what do you do?
I do Geek Speak. That's all I do.
No, I know that sounds crass, but I'm wondering if we shouldn't push Buzz Aldrin out every week. Just every week, say like, "Oh, it's gonna be Buzz Aldrin."
Don't
like,
tell our secrets.
Seems like this great hook to get people to tune in.
You know, he's a really busy guy, and when I first talked to them, and they called back, his press person, who actually works from his home, said he can do it tomorrow. And I'm like, I got to tell people this is happening. I got to promote it and stuff. Okay, we'll do next week. No, I can't do next week. And it was kind of a push out for a little while, and finally had the date, and I checked on Tuesday in the last minute. I mean, just really 3 minutes before walking into the air room, I found out that he wasn't going to make it. But he's excited about doing the show, and he's going to be here next week. So we'll have to change our schedule around, and he'll be back. And anyway, John, I'm sorry that Buzz isn't here, but maybe we'll just go down to Los Angeles and visit him in his home, huh? Sweet. That sounds good.
Okay. It's funny, Buzz Aldrin, with regard to the Geek Speak space.
Since, you know, we've been researching it.
Right, is kind of like, you know, you're a restaurant owner and Frank Sinatra walks in. It doesn't matter. You're going to make room for him.
Like exactly.
No, here's a seat right here in the front,
yeah,
Mr.
Right.
Sinatra.
Yeah.
Yeah, Mr. Aldrin.
You know, reading up on Buzz, I'm kind of glad we get to do a little bit of talking about him without him being on the air with us, because he's quite an amazing guy. I mean, when it really comes down to it, we were doing this Wikipedia read, and John, you've got some library books on it. What's the most impressive thing for you about Buzz Aldrin, John?
It would have to be his work on the Apollo project, and then his subsequent turning his life around. He had some problems after the Apollo project. He was able to turn himself around, and then
he's like dedicated his life to education and research.
He's won a humanitarian award to his dedication for furthering human presence in space and education and science.
Yeah, pretty impressive guy. And one of the reasons he's kind of on a press traveling thing right now is because he's promoting a new series, a new animated series about the moon exploration. So I haven't seen it, don't know much about it, but I was expecting to hear more from him. In any case, let's go on with the geek news today. I'm going to start with Mr. Miles Elam. Miles Cullen Elam, right?
Cullen.
Miles Cullen Elam. You don't have any degrees or anything, right, behind your name?
No, I don't.
Are you a reverend?
No, not like you.
You got nothing, man.
He's got too many junior college units now to get a degree. I didn't know such a thing was possible.
Programmer, political junkie, Miles. Hi.
Hi. Comcast, folks that provide many of us with cable service, has had a long history of problems with people who are considered heavy users.
Mm-hmm.
Unfortunately, there was not any communication about how heavy was heavy, how much is too much.
They've said in the past in their program and their offerings that you have unlimited bandwidth, and then they turn people off every once in a while. And then
right.
The other thing is they were disrupting certain services like BitTorrents. They were actually killing the service and not communicating with their users. So
right.
We've had some discussions with them and some complaints about them. At the same time, the person with the fastest internet connection is of the geeks is Sean. And he's the one that's using cable. So there's a back and forth on whether they're a good company or not.
There's always been this cloud of like where is the line drawn, and they have now set the line. They're capping data transfers at 250 gigabytes per month.
Per month, okay.
Set to start in October.
So this will change their user agreement.
Right.
I just can't believe this.
Now, 250 gigabytes, I mean, a full DVD is 4.5 gigabytes. So is 250 gigabytes a reasonable amount? I mean, are you using that much?
I don't care. I don't want any cap on my usage.
Why not?
Well, it just means that they're going to have to watch what I download, right? They're going to have to keep track of how much I download.
Yeah.
What does that mean?
I guess part of it for me is, will they give me monitoring tools and control tools? I'm fine with it as long as I can kind of know the package. And I'd like to know how much it will cost to get unlimited. I'd also like to know that.
And what is it going to cost if I go beyond 250 gig?
Right. Will they just shut you off, or will they start charging you?
I mean, these are going to be like ATM fees. I'm sick of paying those, too.
So what's the press release really say? Are they saying they have the plan in action, or are they just going to implement something right across the board?
It merely mentions that they're going to be cutting it off at 250 gigabytes.
So what, you just can't download at that point?
I don't know if what they mean by cut off. I would assume stop allowing over usage fees.
Yeah.
Well, no, I don't know if it's going to be necessarily you get cut off from the internet. I think that would be drastic. I think it may go. I don't know. I don't have any.
Well, okay, so the right way to do it is you get the first 250 gigabytes at any speed you want, and after that you get a modem speed.
That was something we talked about last week, was that they were talking about cutting people down to DSL speeds,
right.
Even though you're still paying cable prices, if you go past that limit.
I think that's silly. I think the idea of allowing high burst makes a lot of sense.
It depends on why they're doing it. If they're doing it to create more revenue, then there's going to be overusage fees. If they're doing it because they don't want to upgrade infrastructure to handle the current traffic loads, then they'll limit it.
Well, the whole thing, yes, it is a money issue, but it's also every ISP has always oversold.
Right.
That's always been the case with commercial ISPs, is that they say, okay, you have this much bandwidth and this much speed, but that's using metrics saying this many people are going to be online at any given time. So if too many people start actually using the internet connection that they thought they were going to get, then if people become more, live more on the net, start getting more streaming video.
I moved to Comcast late last year from SBC Global DSL, and I've been very happy with the performance.
Yeah, you've been getting some crazy speeds.
Yeah, I get anywhere, typically on average, 15 to 23 megabit downloads.
Yeah, which is still slower than many other parts of the world in terms
which
of their average.
Which is just unbelievable to me, because that's pretty quick. I can download a 350 meg file in 3 or 4 minutes. So to give you an idea.
Okay, so how many times can you do that per month before you run out of space? 350 megs, so you can do that almost 100 times.
Yeah, that would be like a service pack for Windows XP right there.
Yeah, Comcast gives some metrics there in their press release saying that's 50 million emails. And emails are really small, so that doesn't seem that seems appropriate. Or download 62,500 songs, or download 125 standard definition movies, or upload 25,000 high resolution digital photos.
That's a lot. I mean, it seems like a lot.
Yeah,
Sean.
I don't think I'm going to ever download 250 gigs in a month. But
so what's the problem then?
The problem is what if the one time I do need to? I mean, what's it going to cost me?
Right.
And how do I track that?
Yeah, what happens if you
just
make
like
a mistake?
Just like we said.
And you know, we've all,
and I don't want people monitoring what I'm downloading,
and
you know, especially Comcast.
We've all seen this with our cell phone service, right? Pretty much anyone's had a cell phone, seen this. Oh, I'm not going to use that many minutes. And yet they don't give you good controls. They don't really – I mean, it's really hard to know. And then all of a sudden you get your bill, and it's cost you $1,000. And that's the kind of thing that really scares me with Comcast doing this. Now, some of the – I'm trying to get a quote, but unfortunately I can't find it. I just read that one of the ideas is that Comcast is doing this because they got so much flack for turning off BitTorrent, and that the response was, you know, don't turn off BitTorrent, just tell us how much we're supposed to manage. And so they're doing that. I mean, to some degrees, it's a response to them having traffic problems. And they were killing BitTorrent as a service. All of us hated that idea. And now they're saying, okay, then 250 gigabytes.
This is very vague.
I agree.
You know, well, if they're going to make this announcement, they really need to come out and outline the details.
How it affects you as a customer.
Of how it affects you as a customer.
In fairness to them, they are being less vague than they were before. Before it was you didn't know what the cap was. You didn't know how much you're going to do. So at least they are moving in the right direction in terms of disclosure of an amount. That's just
maybe it's time to get Comcast on the show. I'm sure there's a lot to learn.
It says if you blow the cap twice in 6 months, they may terminate your service altogether. Yikes. They're not going to charge you.
As long as you have some metric of viewing.
Right. So as long as they give you a warning, and that sounds pretty good. Not bad.
But the thing is, it seems like this is so much, but at the same time, more and more people are getting their entertainment from, let's say, the iTunes Music Store.
I know.
To be able to download the Daily Show or stuff like that.
Or if you have an open wireless connection and you don't, someone can be downloading through you.
My open wireless connection is going to have to close. I mean, of course, I use DSL, so it doesn't affect me.
See, I hate that feeling of gosh, now I have to close my network or someone else is going to use my
bandwidth. And they're running a business and they need to protect all their consumers. And if only 5% of them are using all the bandwidth, that's a problem.
It is a business opportunity, though, for someone who wants to get like a bandwidth counter. It's a little device that fits. You know, you plug into one side, goes into the device, and the other device
actually
side goes
into your spam remover. That's
actually CNET News. They talk about this, how Comcast has thrown down the bandwidth gauntlet. They said, starting in October, this is when the restriction's going to happen, and they're not providing any tool. So they actually came up with a bunch of tools that monitor bandwidth, and they have an article on their site. We'll link to it.
All right, great.
We do have someone who called in, Jim from Palo, Colorado, suggesting exactly what we were talking about. Why not do a whole show on Comcast, pricing models, technology, et cetera.
All right, let's move on then. next news story. John, go ahead.
I just wanted to briefly touch on the rovers that are on Mars. It's just simply news that they're still working. They were put up there 4 years ago. They had a 90-day warranty. That's 90 solar days is how long they were supposed to last. We're on Sol 1634, 1,634 days later. Both rovers still going strong, still operating well within their mission parameters.
Yeah.
Still exploring parts of Mars. They're pulling opportunity out of...
So how long?
1634 days.
Wow. I remember when we announced it on air.
That Earth
John,
Day.
You announced it.
Sorry, that was August 7th. August 7th was 1,634 days. We're up to like 1,650 days. So anyway.
Right. But you're saying that this is based upon Earth days rather than Martian days.
Exactly. Yeah. The Martian day is 30 minutes longer than the Earth day.
They haven't been there as long.
No. So that's Earth days.
Earth days are longer than Martian days? No, Martian
Earth days
long.
Are half a minute longer. Half an hour shorter.
Shorter.
Than Martian days.
Right. Oh, so they've been there. So they've been there less time.
Yeah. So they're
Mars,
pulling.
They've been there less time.
Pulling opportunity out of Victoria Crater. It's been in Victoria Crater since like day 55 exploring it. So they're finally going to pull it out and start doing other things with it. Spirit has had some battery draining problems. They weren't sure if it was going to make it through the winter, but it did. There's now more sunlight coming to it. Some of the dust has been blown off the panel, so it's getting more energy. So
these things lasted a lot longer than humans would have.
Yeah, that's true. Miles and I were discussing, okay, here's a proven technology. We've made two of these things. They've both done sensational.
And they were made on the cheap.
And
they were the budget version. This is NASA's answer to missions were too expensive. Make a cheaper.
Yeah.
Mission.
So can we use them on any other planets, or do you want to send more of them?
Exactly. Right. If we want a Mars, a moon rover.
Yeah.
You know, or a moon explorer. Here's a moon explorer. Or, you know, we can make another one of these. We've got a captive one at JPL that they use for testing. You know, make another one.
Right.
Send it up to the moon. So it seems like we have an out of the box solution now.
But
of course, we'll make something different. We always do.
Man, and they'd last even longer on the moon too. A lot more
and
sun.
Running Java technology.
They got a lot more sun, so it doesn't matter how much dust gets on the. Doesn't matter.
That's
much.
True. You've got continuous sunshine, no winters.
Right.
Yeah, but you've got no
atmosphere. You've got winters, but...
No, there's no wind.
There's no wind, so there's not going to be dust on them. But no, what I'm saying about them being on the moon is that they're going to have much more sunlight because they're so closer.
Right.
That is a lot more effective.
Would they get more radiation, though? Because there's no atmosphere to protect them.
Think the radiation matters that much.
I bet the atmosphere is more detrimental.
You know who'd know the answer to this one?
Yeah, I know. He's not here today.
Okay, let's go on. Sean, it's your turn for news. Thank you, John, for the update on the rovers.
Yeah, apparently Steve Jobs died on Wednesday.
John's laughing not because he's evil, but because we all know it's a fake story. But go on. Not really a fake story. What happened?
Oh, he didn't die?
Sean, I thought you'd be really upset about that. I thought you'd be crying if you thought it was real.
Well, yeah.
He didn't die. So some company, what is it? A major company?
A little news company called Bloomberg.
they posted a story.
They posted a story that he died.
Can you imagine?
Was this accidental?
Yeah, it was. Okay, they posted his obituary, and then they retracted it. But those poor, unfortunate souls who went and saw the story and then shut off their computer and jumped off a bridge, you know, what do you do about
Microsoft
them?
Stack. Yeah. So Bloomberg has a standing, ready-to-publish obituary.
This is,
and somebody pushed the publish button.
I'm sure they have
this
obituaries
is pretty typical.
For a lot of...
Yeah. Public figures usually have the obituaries written and updated.
Hey, you know, if you got a slow news day, like, you got to fill your day somehow.
Go write an obit for this person. What a horrible thing to think that there are hundreds of publications out there with your obit on them.
Did any of you see that Saturday Night Live where it was showing Dana Carvey playing Tom Brokaw? Gerald Ford died today, eaten by a pack of wolves. You know, like, because he was going on vacation, he had to try out every single possible obituary.
That's a good skit.
All right. I guess that's not really news.
No, I think it's interesting that it's actually on their website too, which means that it's published in their website as an unpublished story, sitting there. And
can you imagine reading your obituary?
God, that'd be so confusing. I'm dead. Oh God.
Yeah, but this is something that in the information age, as we get more things from the internet, it's like you see this, and it's suddenly it'll be picked up by a whole bunch of bloggers.
Yeah.
And, oh my God.
You really find out how much you know. Do you really want to be remembered like that? You know, you read your own obituary and you say, wait, there are errors.
It would motivate me to start writing.
There are errors in my obituary.
Right,
you need to get this straightened out.
I don't know. Something I've always wanted was being able to see my own funeral just to see, like, you know, who showed up. What did people say?
Okay, so I'm not going to – when you pass away, Miles, but I'm still around, you know, you're younger than me. That's true. But I'm not going to believe it. I'll be looking for you at the funeral.
I'm going to pop out of the coffin. Surprise!
All right, that's enough morbidity. Let's go on to the next news story. Sean, a real one, please.
So NASA has this electronic nose that was designed to sniff out leaks on the space shuttle. It was actually it's made of polymer films and whose electrical connectivity varies. And it's kind of a interesting way to find nitrogen and various other things on the space shuttle. They're going to start using it in operating rooms because the things that it detects are very close to cancer. So right now, when somebody goes in surgery for cancer, all the surgeon has as a reference are the scans that they've made of the body and their vision. They look for it.
Mm-hmm.
But the problem with doing scans of your brain is your brain tissue looks a lot like cancer to begin with.
Okay.
And when you open up a brain, everything moves. Everything changes.
I asked for a less morbid story, but go on.
So it's just interesting that they're using this technology from NASA's Jet Propulsion Laboratory, you know, that's used on the space shuttle. They're actually going to be able to use this in an operating room to
look. So sniffing cancer?
Yeah, they can track cancer. Yeah.
But they can
actually look on a monitor and see it in a brain as they're operating. And where they're at.
So what are they? How? I mean, I'm assuming they've got to get a sample of the air. So they've got something that they're kind of sucking around the brain in a
backside. No, I think this is actually sending. It's just looking into your body.
It's a sniffer, but really, it's not sniffing.
It's looking into your body and creating a 3D map, sort of thing.
Wow, very cool.
That's what I get from the story.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, cool.
And it's called the eye nose. No, it's called the e nose. Sorry.
It's called the e nose.
Yeah.
All right. Next news story, Miles.
Something we were going to talk about last week, but we ran out of time. Was the issue of pacemakers and RFID. Wondered if you wanted to get back into that discussion.
Yeah, Dr. Dawn talked about it on her show last week. Or she didn't. She handed it to us. I can't recall. In any case, the idea that, and we talked a lot about this, that you can actually, some pacemakers, a whole series of pacemakers, have a way to put it in test mode, and you can change their rates, and you can diagnose them all wirelessly, so you don't have to open up the patient. And they didn't put security protocols around that at all, really. And so if you know the codes, you can just affect pacemakers. And we're talking about it's kind of scary because, of course, you can do this from a long distance away with a high enough
radio frequency. Right, that was something that Dr. Dawn was talking about, was saying how far do you have to be? And it's like, it's a radio signal. If you have sensitive enough antenna far enough away to gather it, and you have a strong enough transmitter to get back to it, the distance really doesn't matter so much.
And the other thing is, there's a question in that a lot of protocols, simple serial communication protocols, there's handshaking that goes on. So you have to receive and send, and there's a little bit of handshaking going on. But you can actually emulate those handshakes, because if you and I are doing a serial connection handshake and I send some data asking for something and you respond, I can ignore your response if I can assume how much time it will take you to respond and that you're responding in a certain way. And I can just give the next response. So theoretically, I could do a one-way serial communication with you without wirelessly. Without much problem. You know, I'd have to do it for a little bit longer, which means that it doesn't have to be a sensitive antenna. It just can be a very powerful transmitter, which is kind of scary because anybody could go to Radio Shack basically and buy the equipment to do this and a laptop and do it and broadcast in a large range. So really, these pacemakers have to get out of human beings and they have to be replaced by new ones. It's very dangerous.
Well, new ones have to be designed and implemented.
Well, the newer ones actually aren't problematic. It was only a certain series that they're problematic. The newer ones do have more security stuff on them. But what were you?
But it is a curious thing to say that we're worried about, or in the past we've been worried about anthrax or worried about terrorism in terms of a bomb. What if someone makes one of these transmitters and heads to Washington? You know, where a large number of people up on the hill have pacemakers.
It is a scary idea.
Right. But that said, I don't want people thinking, oh yeah, we should ban the electronics at Radio Shack.
Because
that's a knee-jerk reaction to say, like, oh, we'll just get rid of those materials you can use to make these bad things.
No,
that's
the answer. It's such a simple thing, in fact, that you could probably make a transmitter with a couple old radios. You could probably do something effective.
Right. It's not a question so much of the simplicity of it. It is simple. It's a question of what's the reaction to it.
Right.
The reaction is fix the pacemakers.
You've got to fix pacemakers. And that's the thing is that I'm assuming that you keep pretty good records on people that have pacemakers, because if any kind of recall needs to happen, you really need to interact with the person. So I'm hoping that happens. And I'm hoping, look, if you've got a pacemaker, do you know the timeline?
Unfortunately, I don't.
Okay, but if you have a pacemaker, just research this project. You know, spend some time. Don't get scared or anything. Just spend some time researching it, making sure that your model is safe. And if you know someone else that has it, you know, mention it to them that there is a security breach in it and something could happen. It's very unlikely that someone would do this. So
right. I mean,
it's stress.
If you're not hanging around a whole bunch of sociopaths, chances are you're going to be okay.
So if you're in D.C., you've got a problem.
If you're in D.C., you've got a problem.
Okay, let's go on. What was the news story about that? You just wanted to cover it from last week because
we didn't cover it. Yeah. We didn't cover it.
I agree.
It was worth talking about.
What else do we have on the feed that we are collecting? I guess I'll.
Oh, you want some more news?
Well, who else? John, you want to take the next one? Or should we?
I would, but Safari has freaked out on me. Here we go. We were talking a little bit about this earlier. Miles whipped out his iPhone and was showing Lyle something. Lyle whipped out his iPhone. I realized I'm the Mac guy, or was the Mac guy, and I pulled out my Windows mobile phone and realized the only reason I still have my Windows mobile phone is because I can't tether it. I can't use it with my laptop to make a modem call so that I can use it to be my modem for my laptop.
Not legally, anyway.
I just found this news article that AT&T is looking at a tethering plan. Someone, I guess, had written a note or a hate mail almost to Steve Jobs, not realizing he was dead. About the lack of tethering. Well, there had been an application up on the
Stone dead in a moment.
There was an application up on the App Store that allowed people to use their phone as a modem, but it got pulled down once AT&T realized there was a potential revenue stream here. So the rumor is that there's going to be a tether app coming out. It's not really news at this point.
Is there a rumored price range?
No, there's no details at all, unfortunately. It was from yesterday that I saw this, so I've been keeping my eye open for this, because as soon as tethering's available, that and the lack of 3G support in Santa Cruz area have been the only reasons I haven't gotten an iPhone. So once the tethering is done, I spend a lot of my time over the hill. There's really no reason not to get an iPhone at that point.
Mm-hmm. Especially. And speaking of the iPhones, folks, make sure if you are on the 2.0 software to upgrade to 2.02 of the firmware.
Is that important?
It's important because there was an issue with the 3G antenna on the iPhone 3G where it was inducing or causing the towers to use more power than they would normally. And so that was affecting the call quality and data bandwidth.
So there's actually
users.
A reason to upload.
Yes, the thing is the 2.02 solves the issue, mm-hmm. but as long as people are staying on the 2.0 and the 2.01, the issue is still going to be there for everyone.
Okay, so upgrade the most recent iPhone.
Yeah.
All right, thank you. GeekSpeak is supported by Business with Pleasure, a full-service business center in Scotts Valley, offering computer rentals, printing, design, shipping, delivered office supplies, notary public, and more. Information is online at businesswithpleasure.com. This is Central Coast Public Radio, KUSP. Santa Cruz, KBDH San Auto. We're streaming live and podcasting at kusp.org. You're listening to GeekSpeak. My name is Lyle Troxell. Stay with KUSP for Castle Cottage this morning at 11 a.m. on Central Coast Public Radio. The geeks today are John Tracy, Sean Cleveland, Miles Elam, and we are all ready to take your calls with questions and comments about technology. The phone numbers are 476-2800. Again, that's 476-2800 or toll free at 1-800-655-5877. Did you get that? It's 1-800-655-KUSP. Of course, you're welcome to go to geekspeak.org anytime you'd like to send us information. You can participate in our forums.
GeekSpeak on KUSP is supported by support for KUSP. I see how this is done now. Support for KUSP
Reset.
Comes from Borrego Solar, offering photovoltaic solutions to enable homes and businesses to be green and resource savvy with sharp solar panels. Borrego has 28 years of experience and a local team ready to help. Information at borregosolar.com, and that's BORREGOSolar.com.
Thank you, John. A little rusty, huh? Haven't been on the air for a while. I forgive you.
I just read it like it's written. And it's written with KUSP on KUSP.
You know what? Let's go on.
No, this seriously, that has some ums and ahs written on the page.
Oh, and here's Miles' joke. Yeah, it's right there. Okay. Moving on. No kissing in the air room. The phone number is to call us with questions and comments of technology, 476-2800. Again, 476-2800. I was kidding. You guys can kiss if you want. 1-800-655-5877. Again, that's 1-800-655-5877. And we've had a very patient person on the phone for almost the entire time, so let's go ahead and get Bruce before we lose Bruce. There he is. Okay, Palo Colorado Canyon. Bruce, welcome to GeekSpeak.
Moss Landing.
Welcome to GeekSpeak.
Yeah. Yes. I'm out in the technologically deprived area where DSL is not even an option, so I had to laugh when I heard the 250 gig problem because my options are satellite where I have a 5 gig FAP.
Oh.
And right now I'm trying to look at EVDO for data cards, and at least I'll get faster upload, but it also, the Verizon has a 5 gig FAP as well. That's per month,
5 gigabytes?
And right now when I'm on, and the reason for my question in part mm-hmm. is that I'm right now with Hughes, I have a 200 megabit daily FAP, 24 hours. So with a Mac, where Apple seems to do their downloads, where they do their updates, they do these massive things where they just totally download everything instead of a patch.
Yeah.
So it's often 300 megs, so it becomes impossible for me to upgrade my Mac Pro. Keep the updates fresh. So I wondered if there's any way to use software to chunk that download down Apple.
You can choose what updates you want to do.
They do an OS security update. It'll be 380 meg.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
well,
that's
it's impossible
thing.
Unless I, take my Mac to a friend's house.
But it's a MacBook Pro, right? So
yes.
It's a laptop. So
no, it's a desk. It's a quad.
Oh, a Pro. Oh, yeah, that's not fun. Well, what you can do is you can download the Apple the downloads instead of doing them through the updater. In fact, sometimes when they're large fixes, it's better to do it this alternative way rather than using the auto downloader. What you do is you go to any machine and you can go find the patch and download it as a file, a DMG file.
Oh, and e-machine?
No, to any machine.
Oh, any machine.
So what you could do is get a memory stick, like a 4 gig memory stick or something like that that's nice and portable, and go to a friend's house and download it using their high bandwidth. Put it on your little memory stick or burn a CD and then bring it back to your computer. So you can download them as download packages and they're available to anybody.
And you can do that off of Apple. Like a Windows PC?
Yeah, sure. Any machine.
Yeah, you can go update.apple.com?
Yeah, and what I would do is run your software update so it shows your packages that you're supposed to do, jot down what they are, and then quit that, and then go to someone's house and go find them on the download site. And they're going to be the most popular downloads that week that they get released. So there you go.
Okay, so that's the only real option then, is just to go.
Yeah, because you don't really want to chop them up like that, because that's going to be just a lot more time and work for you. And also, you're going to have to then restitch it, and you're still using the bandwidth. You know, there's nothing different about the bandwidth use. You're still using it.
I can spread it out over 3 days.
Oh, because it's 5 megabytes per day, or 5 gigabytes per day.
200 megabits per day.
250 megabits per day.
Yeah, 5 gigs
wait,
per month.
Wait, megabits?
Megabytes.
Megabytes.
Oh, megabytes, okay.
We're talking about the little...
Sorry, I was worried there was a factor of 8 going on there.
Yeah, no. I think it makes a lot of sense to go to a place. And, you know, if you know a good coffee shop that rents machines... normally, if it's like a small coffee shop and they actually charge you money for their own machines, you can go talk to the manager and say, look, you know, I want to use this pretty regularly. I come in all the time. Just, you know, give me a pass.
I just drive to the library and use their Wi-Fi.
The library is going to work. The library is going to work, I think, though. That's a pretty large file to download to the library. Talk to the librarian and see if it's okay with them.
Okay, well, I appreciate your advice.
Hey, thank you for the call.
Sure, bye.
Bye-bye. That was Bruce from Moss Landing.
And good luck with that. You know, Lyle and I were both in that boat for a while. You were stuck with ISDN and I was on dial-up.
Yeah. Not fun.
And it was, you know, Comcast.
You're still doing Comcast, right, John?
ISDN, what's that?
Anyway, we have an opening right now. There are no calls standing by. We upset so many people by canceling Buzz Aldrin at the last minute that, you know what, I keep on saying?
Buzz Lightyear?
Buzz Lightyear.
Yeah, me too.
Anyway, we're going to go on to news stories as we wait for calls, but you're welcome to call us with questions and comments about technology. The phone numbers are 476-2800. Again, that's 476-2800. Or toll-free. That's right. Completely free for you. 1-800-655-5877. Again, that's 1-800-655-KUSP. Mr. Elam.
Yes, there's a company that has, or a person, I should say, Sungwoo Park, who has invented something known as the VoiceDrict. The VoiceDrict is a device that's about a foot long that has a scanner in it that does OCR and then text-to-speech. So you have this wand, basically, that you drag down a... voice stick. That you drag down the page of a book or a magazine or literally just about anything... And it will read what has just been scanned into headphones.
How big is this piece of equipment?
It's about a foot long. It's about a foot long, and it's about an inch deep.
So it's like a drumstick.
A thick drumstick, but yeah.
Okay. Not like a turkey leg drumstick. I mean, like a thing for beating drums. So
a couple centimeters on a side.
Battery operated, goes along and reads words.
Yes. Completely portable.
Is it just phonetic, or is it actually understand a word? Like.
Well, it's as good as text-to-speech is today in general, which is it's pretty good.
Are they doing
good.
It all in hardware or something? How do they get it so small?
I mean, come on. We have an iPhone that has a processor that could probably do it.
Pretty comparable, yeah. Wow, that's really cool. So does this get rid of Braille?
I don't know if it will. It's something that did cross my mind. That said...
I know. I was actually quoting
The majority of blind people cannot read Braille.
Why?
I actually don't know the particular reason. Whether it hasn't read or because it's something that blindness happened later on in life, so you haven't had the
training. Have you ever tried to read Braille? Very difficult.
I have, actually. It's difficult.
Especially if you work with your hands a lot.
What I find amazing is, I barely have the sensitivity to do it, even though...
Yeah. Now, granted, this is going to require that it always has the batteries ready to go. So I don't know how long that battery life would last.
And what kind of size can it manage? I mean, I'm assuming you'd have to know what size the text is, right? Because if you're going up to a sign on a building versus... I mean, how do you actually position the camera to choose the stuff you want to read?
Well, looking at some examples that they have on the website about this, it's pretty variable in size. They even have it going over a brochure that has a red background with white text.
And they can do it. Wow, that's pretty cool. That's amazing. All right, so that's OCR, text-to-speech, built into a handheld device.
Scanning. OCR, text-to-speech.
OCR means optical character recognition.
So the idea is you wave it across a book, and it reads it off.
Fantastic. All right, thank you very much for that, Mr. Elam. And Miles, we need you to write the abstract for today's show because it's just blank right now. But the news is up there, so if you have questions about what we're talking about, you're welcome to go to geekspeak.org and click on today's show and learn all about the news of the day. And it's August 30th, of course, because that's today. John?
We got lines on the phone,
callers.
Actually.
Oh, we have callers? Yeah. Oh, my gosh. Well, John, why don't you introduce line two?
Hello, line two. Yeah. I would, but my
right. That would from be Jim from Aptos.
Thank you.
I see Rich from SoCal. Okay, Jim from Aptos. Welcome to GeekSpeak.
Hello?
Hello, Rich.
Hello.
Hi, welcome to GeekSpeak.
Is this Rich or Jim?
This is Jim.
Yeah.
Jim from Aptos. Miles wins. All right, go ahead.
Okay, basically I have an XP desktop that I can surf on and get email just fine, and then all of a sudden I noticed I wasn't able to access any of my folders. I click on a folder on my desktop to open up, or my computer, and all the icons go away, and then they come back and nothing happens. I just can't get into any folders.
On your local machine, but you can browse the internet, no problem?
Yeah, I can browse and surf the internet, no problem. I get email, no problem, which is what I use it for mostly, but then one day I noticed I wasn't able to access my desktop.
Getting email. Are you getting the email, downloading it, or are you getting it off of a web page like Yahoo Mail or Gmail?
I'm downloading the email.
Okay, and so what you're saying is when you reboot your machine and you start up, do you see icons on your desktop?
Yes.
And those things, and then when you double-click on any of them, it causes all the images to disappear on the desktop?
Yeah, everything goes away, and I'm left with my desktop image, or the background, the wallpaper.
The desktop.
Jim, if this were happening to me, then all your icons come back, but then the thing never opens.
Yeah, then nothing opens.
Okay, what I want you to do for me, next time you reboot your machine, take one of the icons on the desktop and right-click it and go, and there's going to be a little menu that pops up, which means your right mouse button.
Yeah.
And then a little bit menu that pops up. Do properties on it.
Yeah.
Do properties show up for shortcuts too? Yeah, right? It's always properties?
Yeah.
So click on properties. It's going to bring up a little dialog box and read the text inside that box, and what I think is going to happen is we're going to find out that these things are actually applications, all of them are, and that you might. So there's two possibilities. One is that Windows just is really messed up right now on your machine. The other possibility is that you've got a virus of some sort that's changed those files to actually be executable, which is a common practice for viruses, and it's crashing or doing something that isn't what it's supposed to do.
Another issue is a DLL corruption, which is causing Explorer.exe to crash
every time.
Okay.
But is it just your folders on your icons that have problems?
No, my computer as well.
Yeah, okay. Is there anything on your desktop that looks like a shortcut to an application like Firefox or Internet Explorer or something like that? And do those work?
There are probably shortcuts to applications in there, yeah.
Yeah. I'm thinking Miles' idea is pretty valid.
The fact that everything disappears and it comes back again sounds like
Explorer. What browser are you using?
Firefox.
Right, so it wouldn't affect his web surfing. Yeah, that's a good tactic, Miles. I think that's good. Okay, I think you need to reinstall Windows.
Reinstall Windows.
Yeah, you could just install Service Pack 3 and see if that does it, especially if you have a CD of it.
Reinstall what?
Service Pack 3. So Microsoft offers service packs to their operating systems, and the Service Pack 3 is the level we're at for XP right now. And it's pretty stable, good at Service Pack. So you need to get a copy of that, and you can download it from the internet. But it might be kind of difficult. And you can also, get it from a friend on a CD. But I think you should install that because it's going to be your best bet, your easiest solution. The other solution is to reinstall Windows. And that means you'd have to then go through the steps of service packs.
Okay, so, if I reinstall Windows, am I going to lose everything on my computer? Or?
It depends on how you do it. It's possible to do it that way, but typically no. What I would do if you don't want to spend a lot of time on this is go to a shop or get a geek in your house to help you out with this. Because a shop or a geek in the house is going to have a DVD or CD with Service Pack 3. They're going to pop it in. They're going to install it. It's going to take them, half an hour, and that could be it. And you're going to have to find that CD and DVD, and that's a little harder. So there you
go. All right. So basically I could also take my laptop and download it onto my laptop and put it on the memory thumb.
You could do that. You could do that. The image is going to be somewhere in the neighborhood of 400 megabytes, I think.
Something about that.
Yeah. Thank you very much for the call, Jim.
Thank you.
Thanks. Bye. Okay, now from SoCal is Rich. Rich, welcome to GeekSpeak.
Hi, thank you. Mm-hmm. At work, we're finally getting around to making sure our apps work with Vista. And I guess the first time they're run, we get the message that the user has to give permission for it to run, and right now it says it's from an unknown publisher, and I'm trying to understand what do we need to do. I guess it's called code signing.
Yeah, can you go ahead and step through and accept it anyway, or does it just
You can accept it anyway.
Just accept it anyway. It should stop after you've accepted it.
Right, but I'm just, it's kind of embarrassing to, you know, that we're selling.
Oh, you're the developer.
Right.
Oh, yeah. You got to pay Microsoft.
Microsoft is it? Because I looked online. It looks like VeriSign wants $500 a year. Is that the right certificate?
That sounds more like an SSL.
Yeah, that's a web certificate. For applications that are running, you basically need to register your application with Microsoft. They give you a certificate.
It's a certification certificate, not a security certificate.
Well, it's a little bit of both. It's certification for web pages is also for authentication, not necessarily for the encryption. But at the same, yeah, that's a long story, but I'm not going to go.
We're not going to
get
into that. So, what does he need to do?
So he needs to contact Microsoft. I don't know the one. I haven't certified a Vista app myself, so I don't know the exact process.
Okay.
But you basically need to contact Microsoft, find out the procedures for buying a certificate from them, and it will be something you would
have
to.
It'll cost money.
Yeah,
and they're going to want to review your code, I think, or at least know who you are, right?
Well, they're going to want to know that you're a legitimate software.
Yeah, there's a whole process you have to go through. It's one of those things that is kind of disturbing at the same time. It's a good idea because then, theoretically, people can't develop malware without Microsoft knowing about it.
Right. The idea, without getting that little warning, is saying, we trust this person. But how do they know they can trust you unless they know you that – unless you've made a relationship with them in some way?
It's actually something that Miles and I have been kind of – talk about every once in a while. How do you actually solve the malware virus problems? We covered this in last week's show. Talked a lot about this. It's like, how do you actually handle it? And one of the ideas is, you know, you stop letting computers run any application they want. You only allow a certain amount, which is traditionally called a white list. We're doing it more PC. We're calling it an approved list. And Microsoft basically is built into Vista this idea, though you can circumvent it pretty easily. But the idea behind, I mean, in that the user can say accept anyway. But the idea is very sound. It kind of warns people, this application, we don't know if it's trustworthy, so you have to make the decision. And as you're a software developer, you have to tell Microsoft that you're trustworthy. You have to prove that. They're going to want some money from you, and then that's going to be okay. Now, I wouldn't be surprised if there is vendors that will be the middleman for you on this, that will do some of the negotiations with Microsoft, because it seems like there'd be a market there for small shops to be able to put their application into a larger group, and that collective submit a whole bunch of apps at the same time or under one installer. But that might be more complicated
first
than you want to go into.
The first step would be some Google searches on Microsoft Vista certification.
Certification for Microsoft Vista.
Okay.
Thank you,
Good.
Rich.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
We're taking calls with questions and comments about technology. My name is Lyle Troxell. This is Geek Speak. John Tracy, Miles Elam, and Sean Cleveland are all in the air with me. It's classic Geek Speak. You're welcome to call us with questions and comments questions and comments about technology even. The phone numbers are 476-2800. That's 476-2800. Or toll free at 1-800-655-5877. Again, that's 1-800-655-5877. From Santa Cruz, Brant.
Hey, guys.
Hi. Welcome to Geek Speak.
I recently purchased, it's actually a few months now, a Dell laptop. And I have an old Dell laptop, and I want to migrate all my stuff from one to the other. And I want some recommendations on how I should proceed.
By all your stuff, do you mean just your files and information, or do you mean also your user account?
No, I am a software developer in addition to being a broadcast engineer. And so I have a lot of applications I need to move over, as well as secure files. So it's a little more complicated than... This is a work computer, not a just-kick-around kind of computer.
Okay.
Yeah, you're right that it's a little bit more complicated.
I wouldn't do it this way.
Okay. But, how would you do it?
to give some background as to why this is such a pain, with Windows, you have some things are in the registry, but a lot of programs are very inconsistent as to where they put stuff into the registry. So there's
and
stuff
the only
all
thing that really
place.
Knows is their installer.
Exactly. And even then, some of their installers don't always work correctly. And then there's a question of, is it installed in program files or is it installed someplace else? So they put some – and do they put their settings in the program directory? Do they put their settings into documents and settings like they're supposed to?
Right.
So –
So this is why I don't do this. I install Fresh OS, install applications on them. I don't try to move applications between Windows machines.
Yeah, I'd have to agree with Lyle. I would say back up your user, your you know, Word docs or any any products of those programs that you have made, and then do the reinstall.
Yep.
What about the files and settings transfer wizard? It's built in.
Yeah, that's
Windows.
An option. If you have a second machine, you know, install Windows on that, and then do the auto transfer and let it handle it. I think that's pretty valid.
Oh, have you used that before, Sean? I've never used it before.
I've used it for not for applications. I've used it for user settings. It's pretty good.
I mean, if you're an XP, you can't. I don't think you can do this to Vista.
No,
Vista is a different animal. Yeah. These are both XP Pro machines. So
you only care about the user files, right? In the settings, you don't care about the applications.
Well, you know, I'm lazy. Okay, so you know, if somebody can, I mean. I was looking at PC Mover, which Laplink sells, which apparently is predominantly supposed to be used to, like, when you're migrating from, like, an XP machine to a Vista machine. But it appeared it would work for other things, and it's gotten mixed reviews on the web. I mean, some people think it works great, and they moved all their applications, and everything was cool, and other people said they couldn't even get their documents across. So
whatever you do, back up before you start.
You know, the first thing, I just always feel this way about Microsoft. Anytime you have an opportunity to reinstall the operating system from scratch, you're going to have a more stable, better experience. Because you don't have to do the upgrade path. You can get the most recent version of Windows with the service pack and install that. I mean, that's just the way, and I know that's more expensive, and I know that's kind of more of a pain. It's not the lazy way to go about it, but I just think of Windows as a timeline to install. So after a year, after 2 years, it just gets worse and slower and more doggy, and you've got applications you shouldn't have installed, and now you know. So you start off with, what do I really want on this machine right now? And you build that machine. And you do that anytime you got a hardware change, and you do that anytime you got an OS change.
Well, I'm kind of moving along your guys' direction. What do you think about the idea of taking the hard drive out of the old laptop, sticking it in an external enclosure, and doing it that way?
That's the way I like to do it. It's very preferred because when you do it that way, you've got all that data that you need right there, and you don't have to deal with trying to do a backup. But Miles is right.
Even in that scenario, he still has to reinstall the applications because you copy the drive over. No. You don't have.
You still have to install those things, but you don't have that problem of you've opened up some obscure application and it's not running. It doesn't have the user settings, and well, you know where the user settings is.
Only problem with that is if you're using passwords, once you move that drive to a new computer, you won't have the security credentials to access those folders where your desktop files and your My Documents files are located.
That's true. On that one drive.
On that drive. You'll be locked out of those
files.
But
if you make the usernames the same and the passwords the same, you'll be okay.
I know where to look for those files, and that's what I do. And you can go online and get this information. If you're migrating from one computer to another, what files do you need to back up first? And they're only in a few locations. Something I do when I install a new system is I partition, if it's a single hard drive, I partition the drive. I make a C drive and a D drive, and I only install Windows. I install Windows on the C drive and all the applications on the C drive, but I always keep my data separate on the D drive. Now, that's not to say that I don't use my documents folder, because you will use that. That's just one of those places you need to make sure you grab your files from. The desktop, My Documents, anywhere else you've placed files on the C drive.
Brent, thank you very much for the call.
Yeah.
Okay, thanks.
Okay, bye-bye.
Here be dragons.
it is sad. But, you know, there is the files and documents transfer, files and settings transfer wizard, and you can actually point it to external drives. You make a folder in the external drive, and it moves that stuff that's part of Windows, your files, to that. You might want to try that first.
Dean from Aptos, welcome to GeekSpeak.
Hey, thanks very much. I had a question for you. I recently have a new laptop computer. It's all Bluetooth compatible, and I have a cell phone that's Bluetooth. And I take pictures and I record people talking into my cell phone, you know, with a recorder thing. And I'm wondering, I want to be able to, you know, transfer those recorded interviews, so to speak, with the pictures, and have it go to my laptop now that it's Bluetooth. And I'm also wondering, is there software that can listen to the verbiage from the person that I recorded, and then I have OCR, so I can print it out?
It's actually called it's not optical character recognition; it's voice recognition, and it's more difficult than OCR.
I got it.
And it's because voices are so different in how they work and the way that they normally take care of that problem is you train your software to understand your voice. So pretty much all the voice recognition software out there has a training period where you read like a page of text, and then as you use it, you correct it, and it gets better for you. But it doesn't work for one-time interviews, especially on a not very good microphone like a cell phone.
Right.
But the transferring thing, yeah, you can transfer your content from a cell phone via Bluetooth to your laptop.
Can I do it automatically, like when I walk in my home and my phone is on? Can the computer read it?
Yeah, well, I mean, the technical answer is yes, but you've got to have the software to do it. And basically, there is software out there that will scan your Bluetooth and see what's around. And if that one thing comes around and it hasn't synced recently, since it saw it last, it can do the sync. I wrote a little script that did that for, or implemented a script that did that on my Mac to do the exactly what you're talking about, connect anytime and sync. And it worked pretty well, but it is a bit of programming. You could do some Google searches on it. Don't know one off the top of my head for it.
Okay, I'll check that out.
Thanks, Dean. And anytime there's a question like this that we can't answer off the air, we can definitely try it on the forums too. So you might want to try that as well. Thanks for the call. Byron, welcome to GeekSpeak.
This is Pat from Santa Cruz.
Hi, Pat. Welcome to GeekSpeak.
Hello. Sorry.
Hi.
I'm going to take you off the speaker.
Please.
Hi. I need to purchase a printer, something to take with me to meetings and attach to the laptop and get some good quality printing, and I'm wondering if you have any suggestions.
For getting a good printer?
HP makes some pretty good mobile printers, and I really do like HP printers better than any of the others.
And they'll work with Mac?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
I'd agree.
I know Canon makes... The bubble jet printers.
I like photography, and so I go for Epson. I don't think it matters that much.
But
what
Epson
you do this,
has a portable.
What you do this is you try to find a good price, and then go on to Amazon and use their lists of ratings and see what people say about them, and find that as a source. Because when 100 people give you reviews of it, you really know what you can expect. So that's my suggestion. Thank you so much, Pat, for the call.
Thank you so much. Bye bye.
Bye bye.
I'm gonna say hi to Byron. I used to work with him.
I see.
Hi, Byron.
Alex from down south, Alex Leas, he runs our forums. He says Kodak EasyShare is really easy to use and has nice prints. So that's a Kodak EasyShare. Thanks, Alex. If you'd like to ask us questions during the entire week, you're welcome to do so. Just go up to our forums. Go to geekspeak.org and click on the forums link and ask away. And hopefully one of us will respond. next week, if all goes well, we will actually have Buzz Aldrin on. I'm sorry that didn't happen this week. We did have a show planned for next week. We'll have to also rebook, which is Almost Green with James Glave. We'll be booking him at some point in the near future too. Lots going on with GeekSpeak, so stay with us. We're here every week to help you out with your tech needs and talk about geeking out. GeekSpeak is a registered service mark of Online Tonight with David Lawrence and is used by permission. GeekSpeak is supported by a grant from Santa Cruz Electronics, offering an extensive selection of computer and electronic parts as well as support services. Santa Cruz Electronics is open daily at 2808 Soquel Avenue and online at santacruzelectronics.com. The geeks this morning were Miles Elam and Sean Cleveland. Thank you guys very much.
Always a pleasure.
And John, thank you so much for coming back.
I'll
I think it's funny
be back
that
next
I,
week if
I have
Buzz
to,
is here.
I think it's funny that I have to like lie that Buzz is going to come in just to get you on the air. It seems like what it's going to be, but no. Buzz really was supposed to be here. He will be here next week, and John will be back. Yes.
If he's here next week, yes.
Because I saw that on the call in, your mother in law changed the
the
birthday.
Yeah. Her birthday. Oh, happy birthday, Roberta! Her birthday today, or yesterday actually. We were going to do birthday stuff, and now we're
well. Thank you for being here. I hope that I see you more on GeekSpeak. It's a pleasure to have you here.
Thank
Broadcasting in HD Radio on 80.9 FM. This is Central Coast Public Radio, KOSP Santa Cruz, KBDH San Arturo, on the web at KOSP.org. For KOSP and GeekSpeak, I'm Lyle Troxell. I can be found online at GeekSpeak.org in the forums, and I'll see you next week.